I'm Katie, mom to two littles and four angel babies.
And I'm Sarah, an advocate for moms and children of all backgrounds and family types.
With two PhDs between us and collective decades spent unraveling how society shapes women's experiences, we're here to shred the rule books and their relentless tide of expectations. In this safe space, the complexities of motherhood find the candid, unfiltered voice. We're Undefining Motherhood, one conversation at a time. I am so excited for today's episode. This is a conversation I have been wanting to bring you for so long. How frustrating is it when you get advice that could really support making your body feel better or your baby healthier, but you don't know how to put that information into tangible action that can change your life day to day? A few weeks ago, in episode 11 of season one, I talked with Dr. Camille Hoffman about what you really need to know about prenatal nutrition and prenatal vitamins. As a maternal fetal medicine specialist who also knows so much about nutrition, she provided us with a ton of incredible information about the latest research on what different bodies actually need and how to find out what types of nutrition are most essential for your unique genetics. If you haven't heard that episode yet, I strongly suggest going back and listening, as it is a perfect precursor to this one. Dr. Hoffman talked to us about the importance of specific vitamins and nutrients, and she gave some examples of what that might look like in terms of our diets and our supplements. Well, today, we're digging deep into how we can actually start implementing this knowledge. I'm chatting with two amazing people, and I am so excited for you to meet them. The first is Kara Everett. Kara has a lot of letters behind her name, MSN, RDN, and LDN, and they basically mean she knows all the things about nutrition, and not just everyday nutrition, but also nutrition as it's shaped by our own unique genetics during the preconception, pregnancy, and postpartum phases. I met Kara after I got the results from my GNAT test when I scheduled a nutritional counseling appointment with her to take all the information I had on paper and turn it into an actionable plan. And boy, did she. I was not even expecting or planning to have any more children, and it has still changed my life. And you're going to hear some of that in today's episode. Only she's not talking about how she helped me today, but she's actually talking about our second guest, Undefining Motherhood's very own marketing director, Sarah Koch. And for those of you wondering, no, this isn't the same Sarah who co-hosts this podcast. She graciously stepped aside for today to make room for all the voices in this conversation. The Sarah we're talking with has worked in the fertility and prenatal supplement industry for more than a decade, and now she runs marketing for Undefining Motherhood. Oh, and did I mention that she's in her second trimester? So when I offered her the chance to take the GNAT test and do a nutritional counseling session with Kara, she jumped at the offer. And then she texted me immediately after to say that meeting with Kara was so incredible, she wished this kind of counseling were part of standard prenatal care. My dream is that someday it will be. And today, thanks to GNAT by SNP Therapeutics, we're bringing these two amazing people together to give you a glimpse into just what it looks like to get personalized nutritional insights to improve your everyday life, and if you're trying to conceive, expecting, or breastfeeding, your baby's cognitive development. Thank you both so much for being here today. I am so excited to have this conversation about how the world of taking care of our bodies and our babies with nutrition and with supplementation is just changing and becoming something that is going to make women's lives and women's health so much better as we continue down these pathways. I'm really excited to talk to two people who are so deeply in it right now. And I'm going to start with a question for Kara. How did you become interested in genetics-based nutrition and or nutrition for women in the preconception, pregnancy, and postpartum space?
Well, that is a great question. I actually started out in my undergraduate life as a genetics major. And after my first year in college at Texas A&M, I switched to nutrition because I really wanted hands-on clinical experience with people in a hospital setting, which genetic counselors now do that, but they didn't at the time I was an undergrad years ago. So I have always had an interest in both fields. But as I said, I focused on nutrition, got my undergraduate nutrition, and then my master's degree was in nutritional biochemistry. And during that time, I took more genetics classes. We didn't really know nearly what we know now about the strong link between genetics and nutrition. But I always found it fascinating how much individual difference there was between people. Some people get sick, others don't. Some people are exposed to certain things and they react, others don't. And the same goes for nutrition. Some foods work for some people and don't for others. So I've always had, like I said, an interest in both of those fields. And after I completed my dietetic internship at the University of Kentucky Hospital, I realized that my real love in nutrition was maternal and neonatal medicine. So I really focused my early parts of my career on in NICU work. Just loved working with babies that were in the NICU. It was so rewarding. Nutrition is, as we know, very fundamental in pregnancy. And then for kids who are born preterm or have health issues, nutrition is so, so, so important for them. And we see positive results from nutritional changes really quickly for them. And so my work with SNP Therapeutics allows me to merge the maternal and neonatal side of nutrition with genetics. And it's just fascinating to me to keep learning about how much genetics impacts our nutritional status and really how critical it is in the early days of life.
Yeah. And can you just give us a little bit more on that? So, you know, for people who are listening who are like, wow, I mean, you know, we have this kind of fad collectivism that we get into when it comes to nutrition, right? And it's like, oh, this is the thing now that people are doing. And it's been all sorts of things at different times. We've had keto and Whole30 and Weight Watchers. And I could go on if I could remember the list of all of them. But we've, you know, once something works for someone, we all assume, oh, it worked for me, so it's going to work for you. And we love to get into these sorts of fads. But what you're saying is actually nutrition is very individual. It's a very personalized. And what I love about hearing that is that it speaks so much to the work that we're doing here at Undefining Motherhood, where we talk about how motherhood, the paths to it and the paths through it, are very unique, very individual. There's no one right way. And so this fits so well from this nutritional angle. Can you just tell us a little bit more about the impact you see of differences between, you know, if Sarah, who our guest Sarah right now is in her second trimester, let's say Sarah's in her second trimester and I'm in my second trimester and we're both taking the same prenatal supplements, we're both trying to eat a similar diet that we think is going to be healthy for us, but we don't know anything about our personalized genetics and nutrition. What are we potentially missing that we think we're getting right?
Absolutely. That's a really, really good question. And it kind of speaks to the fact that, you know, we have national nutrition guidelines that are set by age stages, by gender. I see those as a starting point. They're based on research, but they definitely don't take into account genetic differences in how we metabolize different nutrients. So for example, like you said, if you're both at the same point in your pregnancy, eating the same foods, taking the same nutritional supplements, one of you may be getting exactly what you need and the other may not for a variety of different reasons. So one of those could be your gut microbiome. Genetics isn't the only factor. It's an important one, but it's not the only factor. So for instance, some people can tolerate dairy just fine. Others cannot tolerate dairy. But we know that calcium is super important in pregnancy for everyone. So what I would do is look at each of your diets, look at each of your, you know, how you're tolerating the foods you are eating and see what we need to tweak. We can get calcium from supplementation. We can get it from plant foods. We can get it from other sources. So the same foods may not react with your bodies in the same way. Another one I'm going to mention in regards to genetics is a very hot button topic, and that's folic acid.
Yes.
Folic acid is not an enemy. I'm not anti-folic acid at all. For someone who does not have genetic variants in their MTHFR and MTHF1 genes, a folic acid prenatal is fine for them. They can convert that to active folate and they can use it. However, for someone who has genetic variants in either of those genes, they're not going to convert folic acid to folate very efficiently. And for those patients, I definitely recommend methylfolate instead. And the reasons for that are that if you take folic acid, say on a daily basis in a prenatal vitamin, and you can't convert to folate, you will have unmetabolized folic acid circulating in the blood, which then creates a folate deficiency, strangely enough. And someone would not know that at all if they had not had the genetic testing done to find out if they had those variants. So that's just one of the, you know, one way in which genetics can really open doors for us and be a really powerful tool to help us with our nutrition.
Absolutely. And if you are listening to this, a couple of episodes ago, we spoke with Dr. Camille Hoffman, and I highly recommend going back and listening to that episode, because what she does an amazing job doing is explaining why it is that some people need folate and some people need folic acid. And as a maternal fetal medicine specialist, who is also a nutritional specialist, gives us a really good understanding of how we metabolize things in such a way that people who say, oh, they're anti-folic acid, aren't necessarily understanding that many people can process folic acid easily, and folic acid is significantly more affordable. And so it can be a really amazing, important piece of your supplementation. But if you're someone who doesn't process it properly, there are also a lot of voices out there saying, well, folate hasn't been tested. And Dr. Hoffman does a really good job in that episode of breaking down for us from a sort of metabolic standpoint why that's not really a valid argument in her opinion. And so I really think that's worth going and listening to if you're someone who's interested in this debate. And so I'm really, really glad that you bring that up, Kara. And I also know that's something that's important for both Sarah and me. As we are both recurrent pregnancy loss moms who also happen to have found out during those journeys that we do have some deficiencies in those pathways with different MTHFR genetic variants. And I personally never knew what to do with that because my doctors were kind of infighting over it. And so it's really cool that Sarah now actually has information that she can trust and feels good about to say, hey, what do I do now? So talk to us about that, Sarah. What made you, because when I said, hey, I want to do this podcast episode with Gina, and I think it would be more powerful with you than with anyone, including myself, because you're actively pregnant and you've spent all of your adult life basically in the prenatal and fertility supplement industry. You know so much about this and it's impacting you today. And no one's ever jumped so fast at the opportunity to take a test and get this nutritional consultation. So tell me, what is it for you, Sarah, that made you so excited about this entire process, about getting to take the GeneAid test, learn about the results, talk to Kara, all of it?
Yeah. Well, you took some of the words out of my mouth. I did work in the fertility supplement space for about 15 years. So I just know a lot about supplementation. I've always been really curious about it. But certainly, I think one of the biggest elements was I just wanted proof that my MTHFR variant was affecting the way I metabolized folic acid. And so I guess rewind a couple years when I was pregnant with my first living child. Well, I guess right before I got pregnant with him, I had met with a kind of, he's a naturopath and a little bit more of an alternative fertility specialist. And he had tested me for that and told me I had a variant and recommended I not take folic acid and take methylated folate. And so at the time, I mean, it's still a hot topic in the fertility community, especially, but I just trusted him and I took the supplementation. And then I remember at 16 weeks, I did the blood work, and there was one marker that was slightly elevated for the potential of
spina bifida?
Yes, spina bifida. So I panicked. I was in a complete panic. Did I do the wrong thing? I've been taking so much methylfolate. Everything's fine. My son is fine. But especially now that I'm pregnant, like, I feel like I've learned more and I'm even more of a believer in methylfolate, but I still wanted that proof. So I was really excited to be able to do this test. Also, just because so much of my life has been in the fertility space, I'm also a miscarriage doula. And so I talk to women all the time who are experiencing loss and recurrent loss, and they're always asking me about methylfolate. And so this, I think this sort of test could be so helpful for those of us that are in the throes of trying to conceive and have experienced loss. And all you want to do is make sure that you're giving your body the best chance at a healthy pregnancy. So that was another huge reason why I wanted to do this and just see all that I could learn and see if this could be something I'd recommend to others.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, something I want to add to that about my experience, because I also have taken the GNAT test. I've also done the genetic counseling with Kara. Unfortunately for me, I was finished having children by then. I was still breastfeeding. And so I was able to sort of implement some of those takeaways then. But what I really loved about it is that I knew from recurrent miscarriage testing that I did have an MTHFR variant, but it was the most common form of that variant and the one that, in my understanding, is kind of believed to have the least impact on your ability to absorb folic acid. And that's something I think we don't talk about a lot when we hear this raging debate going on social media, right? Is it's, you know, half the people in the population have this variant. So how does it really matter? There are actually a lot of different versions of this variant. Some have a stronger impact than others. And also there are other variants that are not MTHFR that are also in that methyl pathway. And so what was so fascinating to me when I got my GNAT results was that, one, it never mentioned MTHFR specifically, but it showed me where there was a roadblock in that methyl pathway. But it also showed me that that roadblock was only moderate. The one that it called severe for me was choline. And I had no idea that that was a problem. And that's something that until very recently was not even in most prenatal vitamins, is still not in most prenatal vitamins that are covered by things like Medicaid. And so that was really interesting, fascinating information that I wish I had had earlier. Was there anything else on your test, Sarah, that kind of surprised you that wasn't what you were expecting? Or were your biggest things those methyl pathways?
Well, it's funny. It seems like we're actually quite similar with our pathways. I also had a significant inefficiency with choline and moderate with fatty acid and folate. It was just so amazing to get confirmation that, like, I'd been doing the right thing with folate. And, you know, reading these results over, like, okay, clearly I need to take choline. I don't know that I really would have known what to do with fatty acid because I was already taking some. I did confirm that I was taking the right version of folate. So I think I would have walked away a little better for sure. But oh my gosh, I learned so much in the nutrition consult.
Yeah. So I really want to talk about that because what was so fascinating for me, you know, when I got my GNAT test results, and I actually have the paper right here in front of me, so I'm looking at it, and it's saying, like, here are the nutrients that we're concerned about you getting more of, and here are the recommended daily values for expecting moms. And here is our recommended daily value based on your pathways. And so the standard recommended value for choline is 450 milligrams. For me, the recommendation was 930 milligrams. So that is a huge, very, very, very significant difference, more than double. And so that's a really big deal. But then what it also recommended that I was extremely unprepared for was, because of both the folate and the choline inefficiencies, it recommended an increased dosage by 50% of betaine and a really, really, really significant increase, like really significant, from 2.6 micrograms to 100 micrograms of B12. And I never would have imagined that that would be the case. So before we get into the, like, let's talk about this from a nutritional counseling angle, Kara, can you just talk to us a little bit about, like, why is it that even though I'm seeing the inefficiencies in the methyl pathways, the choline pathway, Sarah is too, why are we seeing such drastically different recommendations for seemingly to the everyday person unrelated nutrients like betaine and vitamin B12?
Yeah, that is such a good question. And I wish I could show everyone the diagram of the one carbon nutrient pathways in the body. I love
Yes, there is an article on my website, and I will link to it here because it shows you all of my results and it shows you the exact diagram that Kara's talking about. So there's a link below if you want that. Sorry, continue, Kara.
Also, no, you're fine. You're fine. Yes. So in our nutrition counseling sessions, we spend a good, I'd say 20 minutes on that diagram probably because mm-hmm. it really gives you a good visual of how all of these one carbon nutrient pathways are connected with each other. And so, like you said, when we're just talking about the results and you're talking about your recommendations, people are probably like, betaine, where did that come from? And B12, what is that all about? And the reason for that, but let me back up just a step. I want to talk about choline real quick because I find mm-hmm. these studies fascinating. The 930 milligram recommendation that you and Sarah both had because of the variance in your choline pathways, that specific number comes from clinical studies that have been done at Harvard and Cornell universities, where they have supplemented pregnant women with 930 milligrams of choline. And then when those women give birth, they do cognitive testing on their babies. And so they tested them at 4 months, 12 months, 18 months, and then they followed them so far out to 7 years old. I have a feeling we're going to have another follow-up study coming, but they have found consistently that the kids born to moms who had the higher levels of choline scored better on their cognitive tests, which I find fascinating. And we know from other published literature that cognitive deficits, so if we're looking at the opposite end, if moms don't get enough choline in pregnancy, we know that that can cause cognitive deficits. It can also lead to higher risk of things like autism, ADHD, and schizophrenia, and those can persist throughout life. So it's just amazing how fundamental it is to get enough one carbon nutrients, including choline, in the first 1,000 days of life is what we really look at, which is the date of conception through the end of the second year of life. That's really when the brain forms all those neural connections and is, you know, developing for the most part. But then to get on to these other nutrients that you said, you know, the betaine and the folate and the B12, the reason that you see increased needs for those could be twofold. One is that you have variance in the betaine pathway and or in the mm-hmm. folate pathway, which includes the folate pathway in particular needs B12 as a cofactor. So folate cannot do its job in DNA methylation unless there's enough B12. And if you have certain variants, that can affect your body's metabolism of B12. And then betaine is actually produced from choline. So if we have a hard time producing choline, we're going to have a hard time producing enough betaine. Mm-hmm. But betaine, we can get it in supplement form and we can get it from foods. So you can supplement more to just help your body out if that pathway has genetic inefficiencies in it. And betaine works very similarly to folate as a methyl donor or a one carbon donor. That's why we call those one carbon nutrients. Mm-hmm. And the donation of those methyl groups is really, really fundamental in DNA methylation, which controls gene expression, which controls pretty much everything in the body. So hopefully that helps.
That helps so much. And, you know, it's so interesting to hear you talk about those studies of cognitive development and the things that they can potentially relate to. And it makes me think a lot about my own personal experience and my own personal genetics. You know, I don't know. I will never have a way of knowing if extra choline would have had any impact on this. But my son, who is almost 7 years old, Jack, he has ADHD inattentive type. And I feel comfortable sharing that with the class because it was with the class. There's a reason I said that, y'all. I feel comfortable sharing that with everybody listening, even though it's his to share, because he actually shared it with his class yesterday. So I now know that this is okay. This is apparently very out in the open. If it's like show and tell time at school and Jack's talking about his ADHD and learning to focus better.
He's taking after you.
He is taking after me. Yes. Let us normalize our mental things. And so what that makes me think of is I know I have a choline inefficiency. And I know, I mean, I did eat a lot of eggs during pregnancy, but like I most definitely did not make up for choline the way that I needed to be. It was not in my prenatals. That wasn't even a thing when I was pregnant with Jack. And I also have ADHD. So there's a huge genetic component. Jack actually, from a genetics perspective, he had this coming to him from all angles. But that also makes me think about it nutritionally. Well, if it keeps being passed down, does it keep being passed down because ADHD is being passed down? Does it keep being passed down because that choline inefficiency in our pathways keeps being passed down? Is it a combination of the two, which is the more likely explanation, right? But if we could get to a point where this were just normal standard of care, everyone could know this information. And it just leads me to wonder, in how many generations would we be able to break some of these cycles that make life significantly more difficult for children and for adults? So thinking out loud there, but I just think it's so interesting the way you bring that up. So Sarah, I want to hear from you because, you know, you talked about how getting your test results was really interesting and really helpful. I felt the same way. But as soon as Sarah got her test results, she scheduled her nutritional consultation. And after that consultation, she sent me a text message and she was like, I just got off my call with Kara. And oh my God, it was incredible. This should be standard of care for everyone in prenatal medicine. Like, there's so much that we're missing. So I have just been so excited for people to get to hear from you. Talk to us about what that experience was like, getting to meet with Kara and have all this science that even you have the ability to understand to a good extent, really laid out in practical terms. Because like Kara said, the first 20 minutes or so, we're walking through what do the results mean, and she's explaining them. You can understand them on your own just by reading the test, but she gives a deeper explanation of what they mean. But then it becomes very practical and very, how do we implement this? What does this look like for your body? So I just want to hear, what did that conversation look like for you that made it such an empowering experience?
It probably honestly stems back to, again, my recurrent loss journey of like always wishing I was walking out of the doctor's office, like feeling confident in my steps forward. Even in pregnancy, yes. Like I still have times where I walk out, I'm like, I don't really feel like I got all my questions answered and that I'm doing everything I can to make sure that I feel as good as possible, that my baby is as healthy as possible. And so I think walking out of this consult, I felt really empowered because I actually had the knowledge to know how to make things better for this baby. You know, we went through all of the different pathways. It was so fascinating to understand, you know, that even though I'm taking all of these omegas, my body might not be absorbing them because of my choline SNP, or which is probably not the correct way to say it. But, you know, it was just fascinating to learn. I thought I was doing the right thing, but now I know that supplementing with more choline will help my body absorb the omega-3s. But what I loved is we went through kind of what my general diet has been. And Kara went through basically every nutrient that you should be taking in pregnancy and talked to me about what I'm eating, what's in the prenatal supplement I'm taking, and do we need to adjust that? Like, for some reason, in my first pregnancy, I was taking a calcium magnesium supplement. And why that didn't follow me into my second pregnancy, I have no idea. But it was like this big eye-opener, like, oh, I'm missing these ingredients. Those weren't even, you know, nutrients I was thinking about. And so going through my diet, having her say, well, for choline, like, you can take this supplement, but these are other foods you can eat. It was just so helpful. Like, I felt like I walked away, first of all, feeling pretty good about the diet I was eating, even though I've been pretty sick, but I've managed to eat relatively well, and knowing what supplements to take to make up for that. I mean, we literally went through every ingredient, and I just felt so empowered knowing that some of them I was completely covered and doing all the right things with my diet plus supplementation, but then also knew how to improve things. I just think it's so rare you feel really confident leaving a doctor's appointment, knowing that you're doing everything you could. And I really felt that way after this consult.
Absolutely. And, you know, what I think you're getting at too is that you walk away with an actual plan.
Yes.
And especially you walk away from the consultation with a plan, and then a couple of days later you get an email from Kara where you legit get an actual plan. And so like I'm looking at down at mine right now, and it's like specific brand recommendations of protein and collagen powders that I can add to what I'm already drinking in the morning to help my body. It's a teaspoon and a half of something that I can add twice a day to help with my fiber intake, to slow digestion for, you know, a number of reasons we had talked about. So this isn't me saying, hey, if you're listening, you need to be, you know, adding this protein, or you need to be taking a psyllium husk every day. Like, that's not accurate. This was her being able to say, hey, Katie, these are things that are actually going to help you. And she gave me the reason behind them, but she also then gave me these easy, actionable steps. She gave me meal plans, and she was really, like, really upfront with me about those meal plans. And this is where I think Sarah and I probably had slightly different, but both really great experiences. Sarah is a significantly healthier eater than I am. And so for me, there was a lot of conversation in this consultation about like, oh, well, would you do this for breakfast? And I'm like, no, I don't have time to do that. Like, I'm telling you what I'm going to do for breakfast. I'm going to have this same protein shake every single day. And so she said, okay, I'll give you some ways to enhance it that will help you even further. Would you do this for dinner? No, if I can't cook dinner in under 5 minutes, it is not being cooked in my house right now, like two young children. And she's like, okay, here's the plan for that then. And so I love how customized that all became. So I would love to hear from you, Kara, about some of the sort of customizations and recommendations that you have made for Sarah, that you make for different people. Because one thing I think we really deserve to cover in the time that we have here is not just the supplement, right? Supplementation is wonderful. It is important. Finding the right supplements for our bodies matters tremendously. But we also know that we process all of these nutrients, vitamins, one carbon fatty acids better in the actual physical form from real foods. And so we're not trying to, for some of us, look, if you are in your first trimester, if you have HG and you are living on, for me with Branham, it was donuts and Honey Nut Cheerios, then yeah, the supplement form is the best you're going to be able to get in. You may not even be able to swallow all of them, and that's okay. You're doing your best. But if you're in a place in your pregnancy where you are, or you're, you know, preconception or you're postpartum, and so you have a little bit more control over what your body will tolerate, then you're in a space where we can make food-related choices that really can help improve our outcomes without necessarily having to worry as much. Maybe we're not someone who can go buy that designer prenatal that has all of the fancier ingredients. And so we know we need to make up some of that in our food. Talk to us about some of these recommendations that you regularly find yourself making to your clients.
Absolutely. So there are, I really do have like a list of like the top five foods everyone should eat in pregnancy. I need to write an article on that one because there are certain foods.
Yeah. We'll publish it if you want to.
Sure thing. We can do that. But there is a small group of foods that are high in one carbon nutrients. And we know that those are so fundamental in pregnancy that most women could stand to eat more of them. But we can work them into the diet in different ways. Some women are not going to eat some of them because some of them are, say, on a vegan diet or allergic to certain things. And so that's when we look at alternative food sources, or we look at supplementation if we need to. Mm-hmm. One of the supplements I recommend for pretty much all women in pregnancy is DHA, because it's very, very rare that I see that someone's eating salmon every day or mackerel or sardines or something like that and getting the DHA they need.
Yes.
And that is fundamental for brain and eye development, as we know. So that is a very common one that I recommend. But then for a lot of women, they need more choline and or phosphatidylcholine as well. Sarah was a great example of that. Katie, you have, you know, variance in your choline pathways also.
Exactly. And I'm the same. For me, it's phosphatidylcholine. I just left that part off earlier so as not to confuse people. So explain more to us there because I found this fascinating.
Yes, definitely. So phosphatidylcholine is a compound that your body can make via two pathways. One way is from choline. Another way is from another nutrient with a long name called phosphatidylethanolamine. You can also get it from food and supplements, but it's super, super important because it works in the liver to bind with fats in the liver and get them out of the liver through the bloodstream and into different organs where they're needed. One of those fats is DHA. So even if you're eating enough DHA, if your body is not making enough phosphatidylcholine, you can't get the DHA, A, out of the liver, and B, across your baby's blood-brain barrier where it needs to accumulate in the brain to help their brain develop. And we never talk about phosphatidylcholine. We hear about DHA.
Never. No one's ever heard of it.
No, literally they haven't.
And in fact, after I talked to you, I went looking for supplements for it. And there was like one company on the market that had a supplement. I know that some others are in the works, but at the time there was one.
Literally, you could hardly find it. Gene8 does now have phosphatidylcholine, so you can find it on
our
website.
Excellent. Good. I wasn't sure if that was knowledge I was allowed to speak out loud yet. So
then you're taking it.
Yes, Sarah is taking it, and I'm going to go order it as soon as we get off this podcast because I need to be taking it because it's just because I'm not expecting these needs don't go away. Like the daily values might be a little bit lower, but I still have a problem with this pathway and I still need that phosphatidylcholine. So like we're getting off this call and I'm going and ordering that from the Gene8 website right now.
Yes, absolutely. I take it myself because I have gene variants and my phosphatidylcholine pathways as well. And you're right. It's super important for everyone because if you can't get fat out of your liver, well, the fat's accumulating and over months and years, you will develop liver inflammation and that can turn into non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And I cannot tell you how many clients I counsel who we go over the phosphatidylcholine, we talk about liver health, and they say, my liver enzymes are elevated and my doctor doesn't know why. And they said, just don't worry about it. And I'm like, okay, you need some phosphatidylcholine. And it's such a simple, you know, fix potentially for many people. And Dr. Zeisel, who founded our company, has done clinical studies where they put people on low choline diets. And some, but not all of those people develop muscle damage and elevated liver enzymes. And then they checked their genetic variants and they found that the people that had a variant specifically in the PEMT enzyme, which is one of those pathways by which the body produces phosphatidylcholine, they're at higher risk of developing liver damage and muscle damage from a low choline diet. So those people need a choline supplement. And when they put them on a choline supplement, they reversed the effects that they found by the choline deficiency. So it's absolutely important for everyone, not just pregnant ones.
Wow. And if you are watching the video version of this and you're seeing my face right now, Kara, I don't know if you know this, but my dad actually was recently diagnosed with liver cancer.
I'm so sorry.
And we found out that he had had fatty liver disease, but that had never been explained to him very clearly. And so now I'm just sitting here thinking about myself and how actually at my last physical, my liver enzymes were elevated. And my doctor did not shrug it off, but he said, we're going to monitor them very carefully. The good news is they're a very low level of elevation. And he did have reasons he believed that was the case. But now I'm listening to you talk and I'm like, oh my God, now I need this supplement more than ever because this like could literally be life-changing. And how much do I wish my dad had had this information 5 years ago when he didn't even know he needed it. And I mean, again, we don't know what would change, right? But we do know that when we're working within the knowledge that we have, we're controlling the things that we can. And then no matter how things turn out, we do get to feel more like we have done all we could. And I think that's part of what's so powerful.
Absolutely.
Okay, so that was a big sidetrack. So how are we, your five foods every pregnant person needs, how do we get phosphatidylcholine in our diet? What are the foods everyone needs? Like, talk to us about this. And of course, recognizing, like you said, not everyone can eat all of these foods or will eat all of these foods. I think it's also perfectly acceptable to say, I'm sorry, I just don't like salmon. And so, okay, that's fine. You don't have to like salmon, and we can supplement. So talk to us a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. So the five foods that I would say that everyone needs due to their content of one carbon nutrients is red meat. Red meat is one of the best. Beef liver in particular is the greatest source of choline. I've not met a pregnant woman yet who is able to eat beef liver. I don't eat it myself. It's very strong. But other cuts of red meat are also very high in choline. The next one would be salmon. It's a good source of choline. It's also a great source of DHA, as we know. The third one is spinach. Spinach is very high in betaine. It's also high in folate. It also has calcium in it, which a lot of us don't know, but for vegans, that's a great source of calcium. Mm-hmm. The fourth one would be eggs. Eggs are one of the best sources of choline. They tend to be, especially for women in pregnancy, more palatable, I find, than red meat, just not quite as strong. You can make them in a number of different ways. One egg has 150 milligrams of choline. So if you're eating two eggs a day, that's 300 milligrams right there. And then the last one that a lot of people are already eating is whole grains. So that would include any kind of wheat products, quinoa, buckwheat, any types of whole grains. They generally all are really good sources of betaine, which again is in the one carbon nutrient pathways needed for methylation and all of those. So that would be a good starting point for everyone to think about.
Yeah, I love that. And so are there specific like meals that you recommend to people that they try to make, or ways that they try to prepare things that might be more palatable? I'd love to have Sarah kind of weigh in on this too, because Sarah is having, she's been extremely sick this pregnancy. And so I know that, you know, she has been talking to you, Kara. She's been taking her G8 prenatal, but she also can't take everything that's in it because of how sick she feels. Some things feel okay, and some things she's having to, you know, supplement elsewhere. And so I would love to hear, like, what are some of the types of meals that you're recommending to people? Because, like, I'm sitting here and I already know answers to some of these questions because I have worked through this with you personally. But I'm over here thinking, well, I don't like salmon, and I don't like quinoa, and I don't like spinach. And I'm fine with spinach and salads, but I was really nervous about spinach and salads when I was pregnant because of listeria risk. So, like, basically, me and eggs are friends, and that's it. So, like, what do you do to try to work in some of these things in ways that are going to be palatable and interesting and unique? Eggs are obvious and easy because there's so many ways to cook them. But what about for some of these other things? Do you have specific kind of meals or recipes, or what are you recommending to people who say, that sounds great, but that's just not how I eat?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. So spinach first, if someone is nervous about eating it raw, they could definitely cook it, and that condenses the volume, which can be helpful for some women. Another thing that I recommend is trying to eat foods that are cold or room temperature instead of hot. So maybe salmon on a salad is easier than like a hot piece of cooked salmon.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's sometimes tolerated more easily if you have nausea, then the temperature can just make a big difference. Another thing is doing like five small meals a day instead of trying to eat three bigger meals a day. And, you know, if breakfast is like a hard time of day for you to eat, just skip it. You could even do maybe a smoothie for lunch. I mean, that can be a full meal depending on what you put in it. I know, Katie, like you and I have talked about protein powder. We are actually working on a powdered form of our prenatal. So for women who...
Yes, I'm really so excited.
Capsules. Yeah, Sarah's like, please sign me up for that. Incorporating that into a smoothie can be a much easier way to get it down, and you're still getting the nutrients that you need. And thankfully, if you're taking a comprehensive prenatal, which Genie is one of them, there's a couple of other brands that I think are really good ones. unfortunately, a lot of prenatals are not comprehensive enough, or maybe they have 50 mm-hmm. milligrams of choline, whereas you need at least the 450 milligrams. But if you're taking a good comprehensive prenatal and you can get that in throughout the day, whether that's in a powder form, or maybe you take three or four doses, like a couple capsules at a time throughout the day, that can be easier to tolerate and also helps absorption of the nutrients if you're not taking mm-hmm. so much, you know, at a time, because the body can only absorb so much at a time of many nutrients.
Yes.
So that can be helpful as well. Sarah, other things that you've been doing that are helpful for you?
Yeah, I was just thinking about after I met with you, like at the time I met with you, eggs, like warm eggs were really hard for me. And you had suggested like, what about an egg salad? And for some reason, like I hadn't even considered it. And that was really helpful. Luckily, I'm able to eat warm eggs again. And like just hearing the things that are so important and like helping me through, like adding more spinach to my smoothie that I make. Like that was a good reminder. Fish has been hard for me, but like hearing how important it is, I can tolerate it better eating it out. So like I'm allowing myself to splurge and buy it out. I think the preparing it can be hard.
That's a huge point, that preparing things can be hard, but eating them is less hard. So if you're getting some of those foods out, or perhaps a partner could cook them if you're partnered, but fish has a strong scent. And so if you have any aversion, that might be one. Yeah, that's worth your splurge. That's a really good point.
Luckily, meat was not something that I was able to tolerate it and still am. And just hearing, again, confirmation from you that red meat is so good, like it allowed me to mm-hmm. just eat it daily instead of trying to have it only 3 or 4 days a week. You know, like little things like that, I feel like really helped make sure that I was trying to hit all I could from a food perspective. Yeah,
I love that. You know what I love that you mentioned, Sarah, too, is putting spinach in your smoothie, because that is a thing. Uh-huh. I wish I had done more smoothies when I was pregnant with Branham, because I could strangely tolerate cold things. And I say strangely, I don't think that's strange, actually. It speaks to what you were already saying, Kara. A lot of people who are struggling with nausea can handle cold and room temperature better than they can handle warm. And so what I do now is I put spinach in my smoothie, and that's a very simple. I wish I had done that when I was pregnant with Branham. I actually did do it when I was pregnant with Jack, but I had no sickness with Jack, and I was sick the entire pregnancy with Branham. So they looked very different nutritionally. But then I also wonder, Kara, are there things that we could, because I love smoothie add-ons, because that's such an easy one for like absolutely anybody. You know, you can get, I have a Vitamix and I stopped making smoothies, even though it's technically supposedly the best blender out there, because it was just so much to clean. And so the other day I actually bought one of these little blenders at Target that you carry with you and you drink straight out of it. It's a portable blender. And I love it because it takes up a tiny bit of space on my counter, and I can just, like, it's so easy to use and it's so easy to clean. And so suddenly I'm finding myself making a lot more smoothies. And, you know, I use protein powder and I use the collagen powder that you recommended. I can put that psyllium husk straight into the smoothie. I can put the spinach in the smoothie. Are there other things we could be adding to our smoothies that would just make a huge difference and we don't know?
Definitely, yes. So one of them that I add to my smoothies a lot is frozen blueberries. Very, very high in antioxidants, flavonoids. And if they're frozen, then they help thicken the smoothie, which is always nice.
I only use frozen fruit in smoothies, with the exception of bananas. I like the creaminess of a fresh banana. But otherwise, like frozen fruit, you don't have to use ice and water it down. You just put the fruit in and then you get more nutrients. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I love to do, like you said, bananas are great as well. This might sound weird, but I usually put a half an apple in my smoothies. Yeah, it adds fiber, it adds sweetness, and it actually adds like bulk. I don't know what it is about blending an apple, but it kind of expands. And I saw a recipe for that one time, and I do that pretty much every morning when I make my smoothies. Two other things you can add, you already mentioned the protein powder. That is a very good one. You can also add spinach powder, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Yes. So it's like dehydrated spinach that's been
so if home. You're hanging out like I was pregnant and you're like, oh, but there's been a lot of listeria in spinach recently, you could use a powder.
You could use a powder. Yep.
Wow.
It's like a concentrated antioxidant source.
Cool.
Yeah. So you can do that. It's pretty strong. So I'd start with like a teaspoon and see how you like it. I've noticed if I get too much, I'm like, that really tastes like spinach.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't, most of us don't want it to taste like spinach. The whole point is that we're hiding the spinach.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is the cool thing about fresh spinach. It literally like disappears. You don't even
know. It disappears. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
It is amazing for sure. And then another thing I recommend, depending on women's betaine needs and what the rest of their diet looks like, wheat germ is very high in betaine. So you can literally get all the betaine you need with like 2 to 4 tablespoons of wheat germ a day. I think it's really easy to sprinkle on oatmeal and salads as well. It has a really mild flavor. But for women who do smoothies regularly, I'm just like, put 2 tablespoons of wheat germ in your smoothie and blend it in. You will not taste it. And you're essentially getting a betaine supplement because it's so high naturally.
Wow, that is amazing. And is there anything we can add if we wanted, say we want those fatty acids? Obviously, we're not going to put a piece of fish in our smoothie. I'm pretty sure the answer is yes. I think I know what they are, but I'm not the nutritionist. Are there things we can add to our smoothies to get those?
Actually, that is a great question. So flaxseed, chia seed, and hemp seed are very high, not in DHA, but in alpha-linolenic acid, which is a precursor to DHA. However, we only convert about 10 to 12% of the alpha-linolenic acid that we eat into DHA. So I see those in the news a lot. They're very healthy. I eat them as well, but we can't rely on those to meet our DHA needs.
So good to know.
Yeah. So it's really important to know something you could experiment with. And I should try this so that I would know whether or not I would recommend it to clients. But there are some companies, including GeneAte, that have a vegan DHA capsule. So it's not sourced from fish. So ours does not have a fishy taste because it's not from fish. It's from algae. Like I say, I can't vouch for what the taste would be like, but I would be curious to try cutting open a DHA capsule that's vegan and adding it to your smoothie. You might not be able to taste it. And for women who are having a lot of nausea, maybe it's hard to swallow a capsule, but a smoothie is easier. That might be a way you could incorporate that in and not have to eat the fish or take the fish oil capsule.
Oh, that's so interesting to know. No fish burps.
No fish burps. No.
Yeah. I take a liquid DHA. It's from Barleans and it's expensive. That's the only drawback. Our Costco has it, but like you can get different flavors. So the one I take is lemon. It's so good, but you could add those into your smoothie easy.
Oh, that's great to know. Cause that specifically is one of the pills you haven't been able to swallow because of nausea, right?
Yeah.
That's a great idea, Sarah. Absolutely.
That's fantastic. This has been so much fun. You have been a wealth of knowledge, Kara. And Sarah, I am so grateful for you coming on when you feel like utter crap to help us, to educate us, to talk to us. You know, both Sarah's and my lives have really been changed by genetic nutrition. And I know that's only going to continue. And I dream of a world in which we can have it as being standard of care for everyone. You know, I mentioned that to Dr. Hoffman, like, could that be is there a world in which that exists? And she said, you know, we do a lot of carrier screening tests for far more rare things than what we get here. So, you know, I like to hope we're working toward that world. But I'm so grateful that in the interim and to build that world, because we couldn't have it without GeneAte and the work they're doing and the research they're doing and the work you're doing, Kara, just, you know, bringing us these products, bringing us these things that are available. So thank you for the work that you're doing. And if you're listening to this and you haven't checked them out yet, I really, really highly recommend it. I even think it's worth it when you're not planning to conceive again, because I learned so much and my habits have changed so much for the better because of it. And also, you know, when I took my GeneAte test and first met with you, Kara, that was it. That was the end of it. And there really weren't plans for all of these supplements. And then what they said was, we're telling people that they need more of these supplements, and then they're struggling to find them. So now we're going to build what they need. And now they're telling us, this is great, but I'm too nauseous for this. So we're going to try to put it into a powdered form. And so the work that you all are doing is going to change the world. It's already changed my world. And I am just so grateful to you. And thank you both for joining us, because this has been an amazing conversation. And I'm so glad we get to bring it to the world.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Friend, I hope you learned half as much as I did from this episode. I'm especially grateful to this episode's exclusive sponsor, Genate by Snip Therapeutics. There is so much you can do to learn about your own personal nutritional needs, whether you're trying to conceive, pregnant, or postpartum. That's why I'm so excited that Genate is offering a special bundle that pairs the groundbreaking Genate test with their top-of-the-line prenatal vitamin. Seriously, the research behind this vitamin is truly mind-boggling. Genate is making personalized genetics and high-quality supplementation so much more accessible by bundling these products. With a 3-month prenatal subscription, you'll also receive a significantly discounted Genate test with a free 30-day supply of prenatal vitamins. Learn more at undefiningmotherhood.com/genate and use code undefining10 for an extra 10% off. I am telling you, friend, you don't want to miss this offer. I cannot overemphasize the peace of mind these products would have given me during the most tumultuous years of my life. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Undefining Motherhood podcast. It's been an honor to share this time with you. Remember, you're not just a listener, you're an essential part of our community. If today's conversation resonated with you, I have 3 simple requests for how you can help us grow. First, subscribe wherever you listened so you don't miss an episode. Second, we'd love it if you could leave us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast, as that's one of the most important ways we can grow and share our message and community. And finally, we'd love to hear from you. Jump over to Instagram and find us at Undefining Motherhood, where you'll see a post about this week's episode where we can continue the conversation. Thank you for being a part of the Undefining Motherhood community, where together we're making change. Until next time, take care of yourself and each other.